Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm your host, David Latulipe. This week, pianist Jeffrey Siegel returns to talk about his latest keyboard conversation project, The Romanticism of the Russian Soul. Wayne Hazard and Dudley Flores share details about Bay Area Dance Week, and Paul Drescher and Amy X. Newberg talk about their collaboration for the Paul Drescher Ensemble's concerts this coming weekend. Stay with us. Drescher, an excerpt from his Din of Iniquity, which will be heard this weekend at the ODC Theater by the aforementioned Paul Drescher Ensemble. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the studio one of the most creative forces on the Bay Area contemporary music scene. Composer, inventor, multi-instrumentalist Paul Drescher was here last month to talk with me and choreographer Margaret Jenkins about his work Time's Bones, which received its world West Coast premiere with the Margaret Jenkins Dance Company. Paul has also been heard giving the pre-concert talks for the Berkeley Symphony Orchestra, who commissioned his concerto for quadricord last year, an instrument of his own invention. My colleague Sarah Cahill had him on as a guest recently for Revolutions Per Minute to talk about his upcoming concerts this Friday and Saturday at the ODC Theater called Memory Gain, the Paul Drescher Ensemble Electroacoustic Band with guest artists. Paul, welcome back to KLW.
Great to be here, David.
He's joined by one of those aforementioned guest artists, another incredibly creative artist, who for more than 25 years has been a real innovator in the use of live looping technology with electronic percussion, combining her amazing four-octave vocal range with her colorful and often quite humorous lyrics. She's composed extensively for dance and visual media, as well as animation. I talked with Amy X. Newberg a number of years ago on a Then and Now program, and it's great to see that she's still continuing to create and thrive. Her recent project, The Secret Language of Subways, a 13-song cycle for voice, three cellos, looping, and electronic percussion, has seen some high-profile performances at the San Francisco Symphony After Hours, the Los Angeles Philharmonic West Coast Left Coast Festival, and here at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. Amy, welcome back to KLW.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Well, Paul, from one project to the next for you. So how were those performances of Time's Bones?
Oh, they were wonderful. We did four shows, and it's great. With four shows, you really get to settle in. So, you know, there's always the excitement and the stress of the first show. And then to do three more, we were able to really relax. And each one got smoother, and I think both the way the dancers and the musicians worked together became more and more effective. And then we ended with this big party where dancers from all 40 years of Margie's company showed up, and it was remarkable. There was people there I hadn't seen for two decades, and it was really a pleasure to end that sort of period of work that way.
Well, great fun, and I'm sure you'll be collaborating with them again.
I hope so. Yeah, we've been doing it for 28 years, so there's no reason to stop now.
Well, this upcoming project is all your baby, with premieres by Sebastian Currier, Conrad Cummings, and Lisa Biawala, as well as music of James Mauberly and your own Din of Iniquity, which we heard a little excerpt of. Let's start with a composer that I first heard last week when you were on Sarah's show, Conrad Cummings. Amy X. Newberg, I understand you studied with Conrad.
I did. I brought Conrad into this project. I should say a few things about the songs that I'm singing, that they are actually sort of teasers for a large project that Paul and I are doing together in December. We've been talking about it for many years, and we've finally raised the money. Cal Performances has agreed to host us, and we're going to be premiering 10 songs by 10 different composers, writing for me to sing and use electronics along with Paul Drescher's ensemble. And these are going to go along with slide projections of photographs. There's kind of a whole theme to it. But so we collaborated on whom we wanted to bring in as these 10 composers. And these two pieces we have early to sort of entice people to, you know, kind of follow us and maybe come to the big show in December. Lisa Bilau and Conrad Cummings are both from New York. And they have given us wonderfully contrasting pieces. Conrad's piece is a beautiful lyrical ballad, sort of a haunting musing. And Lisa's is kind of a crazy, semi-composed, semi-repeat this measure over and over again as long as the arrow goes kind of thing that is made from little snippets of overheard conversation. And I brought Conrad in because I have become close friends with him after having studied with him many years ago at Oberlin Conservatory. He was my first electronic music teacher, and I kind of owe my career to him in a way. He got me started. He was very encouraging. Embarrassingly enough, I was one of two women in the class at that time, that this intro to electronic music class. And the other one was Emily Bizar, who is to this day is one of my very best friends and who's also still doing stuff for Voice and Electronics. We've kept in touch, mm-hmm. and this is the first time that we've actually worked together.
Neat.
So I'm thrilled that he's one of our composers.
And Paul, when did you first enter?
Well, actually, I met Conrad when he used to be, he had family roots here in the Bay Area, and I met him, I think, in around 1981 or so. I remember meeting him with Ruth Felt from San Francisco Performances, when San Francisco Performances was just at the early stages of its growth. And I think Conrad was sort of was somebody who had been in the Bay Area for a while, and we met, and he was interested in new opera, and I was composing new opera at that time, sort of experimental performance things, and so we'd become friends, but we'd never performed any of his work. And so when Amy suggested Conrad, I said, sure, I've really enjoyed him, and I've enjoyed his work over the years. There was no argument about including Conrad on our list of 10 composers to commission.
Well, I'm taking listeners back to this appearance of yours with Sarah Cahill on Revolutions Per Minute, because you played an excerpt of Conrad's work that was just absolutely hypnotizing. So I thought I'd play it for people during the daylight hours now. This is a work of Conrad Cummings called By Keeping Things Exactly the Way That They Are. And then more with Amy X. Newberg and Paul Drescher.
Exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great. things exactly the way that they are. We'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great.
By keeping things exactly the way that they are, we'll find truth in the smallest things that are just as good as the big ones that keep this country great. By keeping...
By keeping things exactly the way that they are. From Conrad Cummings' opera, The Golden Gate, the lyrics set in verse. It's a novel in verse by Vikram Seth. Music of Conrad Cummings represented on this weekend's concert, the Paul Drescher Electroacoustic Band in Memory Gain at the ODC Theater. Paul Drescher and one of the guest artists, Amy X. Newberg, in studio with me. You're listening to Open Air. I'm David LaTulipe. Welcome once again to Amy and Paul. Amazing, amazing music. Now, the work that's going to be done this weekend is slightly different. Amy was mentioning it's more a ballad that's being done of Conrad Cummings.
Yeah, it's much more lyrical, but it has the same wonderful sense of how to set speech so that it sounds natural while still staying very musical. That's a gift you kind of have to be an effective vocal composer.
Mm-hmm. And it also, I think it's similar in that he uses conventional harmonies frequently, but then he finds ways to make them disjunct, whether it's through rhythm or through juxtaposition with other harmonies. So I think that kind of that's while the rhythmic characteristics of the song we'll be premiering are quite different, I think you'll get the same composer sensibility.
Nate, tell me more about the other works that are being performed on this concert. You mentioned your Din of Iniquity. You seem to have this thing with titles that are a little bit clever as well.
Well, I like wordplay.
Okay.
And Din of Iniquity was certainly one that works out quite well, but also fit the atmosphere of the work. We heard a section that was in that work there. It's about a 12-minute work, and it has radically contrasting sections that sort of jump from one to the other. They don't have my usual sort of slow evolving transformative transitions. They are much more. It was much more of a butt splice. I was working on that, and I'm actually very happy with that technique. Now, we've picked older repertory from each decade of the Electroacoustic Band's 20 years. We're in our 20th anniversary year, and in fact, the project with Amy that that we're doing in December at Cal Performances is our official 20th anniversary concert. So my piece, Din of Iniquity, was one of the first works written for the Electroacoustic Band. And then we're also doing a piece by Jim Moberly called Fusebox, a piece that we premiered 10 years ago. And we're really fond of it, and we're going to record the work after these concerts. So we thought we'd put it on the program.
Another prolific composer, Lisa Bialawa, who I've talked with here on
right.
Open Airs.
And she's done a song that's completely different than Conrad Cummings' song. Overheard text, mostly from riding around in the subway. And it's musically completely contrasting from Conrad's style. And it's exactly what I think Amy and I were going for in picking our composers, that each composer would approach the voice and electroacoustic band in a completely different and personal way.
Speaking of voice, Amy, I wanted people to get a sense of your wonderful singing technique. What's drawn me to you over the years, how incredible range you have. You brought an excerpt of from one of your CDs I'd love to share with listeners.
Oh, great.
Introduce this song.
Well, this is from The Secret Languages Subway, which I began. I think it had its first performance in 2006, and we have had a number of performances since then, and sort of kept the project going a bit. Although we're currently on hiatus, speaking of subways, I wrote most of these songs sort of in my head while sitting on the New York subway, which I found to be a very kind of mesmerizing place for ideas to flow.
I miss those days. I lived in Brooklyn for 15 mm-hmm. years, so the subway was just an amazing place.
Yeah.
The reading I got done,
the reading,
studies you would have.
Right, yes. Amazing. So a very evocative place to just kind of hang out. This particular song is sort of short and punchy and to the point, and starts off with a musical theater approach, and at the end I go into my more operatic singing, and it's sort of a bouncy, fun reflection on city life, I think.
Music of Amy X. Newberg, and then more with Amy and Paul Drescher.
Everyone knows that nothing is any good unless it's difficult. It has been 100 years since I have smiled at the sky or felt a California breeze, and all its happy have a nice day's wishing by. Everyone knows that beautiful is the opposite of smart. Then why was it so easy? And afterward there was the cab. Then I looked down, and there in my hand was the book that described what just happened. Very simple.
Those were your words. Somebody might recognize them. Those were your words. Those were your words. Somebody might recognize them. Taxi blastings in the background. Somebody might recognize them. Those were your.
Those were your.
Those were your.
Those were your.
Somebody might recognize them.
Difficult, written and performed by the virtuosic Amy X. Newberg with the cello Chixtet. That CD, The Secret Language of Sabouets, available at Amy's website, amyxneuberg.com. That's Amy X, N-E-U-B-E-R-G.com.
U-R-G.
N-E-U-B-E-R-G.
N-E-U-B-U-R-G.
Exactly. .com. Amy, incredible stuff there.
Thank you. Looking
forward to discovering the rest of that CD. And to hear you this weekend as part of this electroacoustic band of Paul Dreschers. Paul, another ensemble is involved as guest artists. I understand they go by the name Oon. Explain to me about Oon, please.
Well, Oon is the duo of Paul Hansen playing bassoon and Ariane Kapp playing electric bass. And saying bassoon, most people go, oh, dweeby classical instrument. Paul Hansen is the antithesis of that. I've known Paul since I first heard him when he was in high school in 1977. I was teaching at Casadero Music Camp, and I was just blown away at this guy's musicality. And I've worked with him since in my project since 1984, and he was one of the original members of the electroacoustic band. And in fact, Din of Iniquity was written for him, and so you'll hear, in that performance, you'll hear the bassoon. So he was going to be on the program, and Paul said, I've got a new duo with this bassist, Ariane Kapp, really virtuoso bassist. And so I said, well, why don't we have you guys as our opening act? And so they're going to play 15 to 18 minutes from their new CD, Polaris. And they're a duo that Paul plays electric bassoon and Ariane plays electric bass and uses sort of that Stanley Clarke technique of hammering on the fingerboard. So it's not playing a bass line. It's playing harmony. It's playing counterpoint and things like that. And so I thought it might be really nice if we played this work that Paul composed, actually called Emerald Mile. And you'll hear that there's bass and bassoon, and it's the bassoon's got delay and looping and things like that on it.
Neat. Well, let's go out with that music, but not before I thank you both for coming in. Paul Drescher, the concert is this weekend at the ODC Theater. Tickets at odctheater.org. It's Memory Gain, the Paul Drescher Electroacoustic Band with guest artists Amy X. Newberg and Oon. Amy X. Newberg, thanks so much for taking some time today.
Thanks for having us.
Looking forward to hearing more of your upcoming activities. Information at Amy X. Newberg, N-E-U-B-E-R-G.
U-R-G.
N-E-U-B-U-R-G. I misstated it every time. .com. No, I got the .com right. And music of Oon. Which is Paul Hansen and Ariane Kapp, featured this weekend with the Paul Drescher Ensemble. I feel I must restate Amy's website, which I mangled more than once during our interview. It's amyxneuberg.com. That's spelled Amy X N-E-U-B-U-R-G.com. Also, a centerpiece of this weekend's concert that we didn't get a chance to talk about before our guests fled the studio is a work by Sebastian Currier entitled Artificial Memory. Again, tickets at odctheater.org or more about Paul and company at drescherensemble.org. Still to come this hour, a radio conversation with pianist Jeffrey Siegel about his keyboard conversations. I'm David LaTulipe, and you're listening to Open Air. Bay Area Dance Week is coming and kicks off with a huge opening celebration at Union Square, featuring a dance group to iconic dance moves on Friday, April 25th. Throughout the week through May 4th, highlights will include many other public space happenings. A couple of the gentlemen involved in Bay Area Dance Week are with me today. Before turning his hand in the field of arts management, Wayne Hazard turned a lot more than that during a distinguished 20-year career performing with many notable choreographers and companies, including Joe Good Performance Group, Margaret Jenkins Dance Company, Ed Mock and Company, June Watanabe, Aaron Osborne, many others, garnering multiple awards and accolades. He continues to work as an advocate for dance. Wayne, welcome to Open Air.
Thanks, Dave.
Native San Franciscan Dudley Flores is the artistic director and master trainer for rhythm and motion at ODC, a much-admired Bay Area dance teacher. He was voted San Francisco's hottest dance teacher of 2013. You can't see that on the radio, but I'll vouch for that. His classes are explosive, high energy, and a place to have fun, let go, and enjoy the process of movement. Dudley, welcome to KLW.
Thank you for having me.
And Open Air. Well, Wayne, could you take us back? This was founded in 1981, so give us a little bit of the history of Bay Area Dance Week.
Well, actually, Dancers Group, the organization that I run, was founded in that year, but Bay Area Dance Week only goes back 16 years, so it was an opportunity for the dance community to come together and modeled after the wonderful open studios model that the visual arts community does, and a way to spotlight and open doors to the amazing diversity, thriving dance community that's been here and continues to grow in the Bay Area. So 16 years ago, a group of dance organizers and myself decided that an open studios model where you could hold a free class, do a performance, do a lec dim or some kind of showing about process would be a great way to show the kind of range of dance that's going on here, from Hula Masters to the San Francisco Ballet to classical Indian dance, modern dance, hybrid forms, all of that. And so it took off. And today we have upwards to 500-plus free events that happen over the 10-day festival each year.
So that's grown every year and diversified as the years have gone on.
Correct,
I've noticed
yes.
Some of the events that are going on. You have dances and workshops from different dance types from around the world. You mentioned hula. What other areas of the world are going to be represented?
We definitely have things from Africa, from Southeast Asia, from, you know, specifically hula from the Hawaiian Islands, from Europe, obviously. We have Scottish dance, we have things from South America, Argentine tango, we have things that have been devised specifically here, pole dancing and other kinds of forms that are going to be things about entering the body and discovering, you know, where you're at in this stage. Our hippie culture is alive and well and thriving in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. Dudley Flores, how long have you been involved with this special week of dance?
Since 2005, with one of the original opening events, we used to have the West Coast Longest Conga Line, and I was one of the organizers for that event.
Where was that held?
That was held at Union Square. Well, it was held at Union Square, and it traveled all the way down to Justin Herman Plaza one year. So, but this is my third year choreographing one dance, the opening event.
Uh-huh. So tell us what's going to happen on this opening event on Union Square on the 25th.
Lots of fun.
Lots of lots of bodies wriggling.
Lots of bodies. Right. Well, this year we're paying tribute to some of the iconic dances and dance moves of pop culture. So everything from The Running Man to the 1920s Charleston, Gangnam Style, which was popular in 2012, and everything in between. We're inviting the community and our dance community of all ages, all backgrounds, to come out and do this celebratory dance in Union Square.
Neat. Special moves being created for this, or are they based on moves that you've already worked on?
These are moves that a lot of people have seen either through television or through street culture or some other form in pop culture. A number of people have seen Michael Jackson's Beat It music video before, and so the original choreography from that music video is there. Again, like the Charleston from the 20s is there. people have seen YMCA at some wedding or other social event and can relate to that. So moves like that are incorporated in this 7-minute piece of choreography, which is accessible and fun and everyone can do or do parts of.
Right, right. Now, this is called the Bay Area Dance Event, so things aren't just happening here in San Francisco. What else is happening in the surrounding areas, in Oakland and where else?
Correct. So it goes out through all the 11 counties. While we have probably the largest concentration in San Francisco, we have events taking on down in Fremont, up through the peninsula in Mountain View, Mill Valley, all the way up into Santa Rosa. Obviously, Oakland has a thriving dance community, so there's lots of events there. People can go to bayareadance.org and search for a type of event, look for a particular class, or even put in a teacher's name, and different classes will come up in terms of the range of events that will happen all throughout the Bay Area.
So about how many different organizations are coming together for Bay Area Dance Week?
Great question. We have probably over 200 organizations coming together to present these activities. And again, they're studios that can be found in your neighborhood that might be mom-and-pop style, tap, jazz, ballet, gymnastics things, to major institutions, as I mentioned, like the San Francisco Ballet or Chitra Das Dance Company that has classes offered in the Bay Area, and they have schools in India as well as here. So, I mean, the range of the kind of ways that people can enter in to find their favorite kind of dance is amazing.
Fantastic. BayAreaDance.org for more information. And all events are free, by the way.
Correct.
Now, I'm one of the most self-conscious dancers imaginable. What kind of events are planned to make me get out of my skin and move a little bit more freely?
Well, I mean, there are tons, as Wayne mentioned, you know, from free classes or demonstrations or performances. So I believe, we all believe, really, that anyone and everyone can dance. You know, you have to learn to walk before you run, right? So if you can do the twist or, you know, the jerk or the monkey or anything that you've seen on TV, you can definitely dance.
All right, I think I got a couple of those in my mind. I feel better already.
So, but there are tons out there over happening over the 10-day festival.
Great. That's Dudley Flores. He's going to be involved with the main kickoff event on April 25th at noon in Union Square for all ages and all abilities of dance. Check out BayAreaDance.org for more information. Wayne Shorter, I also want to ask, thank you for coming by today, Wayne Hazard. That is Wayne Shorter. I was thinking jazz this morning.
And that would, I would take that. That would be a huge compliment.
Thank you both for coming in today. And to get you all in the mood, here's a little bit of the music that you'll hear on that opening dance on April 25th, high noon, Union Square. Be there. Learn more at BayAreaDance.org. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You broke my heart 'cause I couldn't dance. You didn't even want me around. And now I'm back to let you know I can really shake 'em down.
Teach me how to dug, dug.
Shake Your Booty Whatever Way You Want on Friday the 25th to kick off Bay Area Dance Week. More information at bayareadance.org. And now for something completely different. The distinguished American pianist Jeffrey Siegel was last in our studios in January of last year to promote his Bay Area concerts. He's been soloist with many of the world's great orchestras and in recital presents Keyboard Conversations, a concert with commentary format that includes an audience question and answer period. These Keyboard Conversations are available on CD as well as DVD with titles and subjects that include the music of Chopin, Beethoven, Mozart, An American Salute, plus Music for the Young and Young at Heart, among other titles. Tonight, he's at the Palo Alto JCC for a program called Russian Rapture, Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff, tying in nicely to his Keyboard Conversation title, The Romanticism of the Russian Soul. And he joins me once again in studio to talk about that recording project and concert. Jeffrey, welcome back to KLW.
Nice to be back with you. Thank you.
Indeed. Well, first of all, a timely subject. Did you arrange the news around this particular Russian concert?
No. Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff are two of the most well-loved and frequently played composers of our time. And I love this music. The audience loves this music. There will be many familiar works on the program tonight, many concert favorites, but there will also be some pieces that even for the avid music lover will be, shall I say, welcome musical discoveries. And that's particularly true with Tchaikovsky. It's a shock even for a professional pianist to learn that Tchaikovsky wrote over 100 solo piano pieces. Why is it a shock, David? Because we hardly ever hear any of them in concert. And unlike Rachmaninoff, who was one of the greatest pianists this world will ever see, Tchaikovsky was not a virtuoso pianist, nor was he a public performing pianist. And yet he writes all this glorious piano music. And for me, the same melodic warmth and sense of drama and fire that take us over and over again to the very familiar orchestra works of Tchaikovsky, these musical elements are to be found in abundance in the solo piano pieces. So there'll be some real discoveries tonight.
Were those solo pieces as published as his major war horse works, or were they more like trunk pieces that
No,
he kept?
In fact, they were even more famous because in Tchaikovsky's day, most music making was domestic. The accomplished amateur at home wanted music to be able to play on his piano. So publishers were constantly besieging popular composers of the time, like Tchaikovsky, to write piano music for home use, so to speak. And that was what publishers could most easily sell. And that really is one of the, shall we say, inspirational factors for so much of the piano music of Tchaikovsky.
Well, we're going to shift our conversation between what's happening down in Palo Alto tonight for your concert and what's on your Keyboard Conversation, because it's all related to the whole Russian oeuvre, as it were. The Keyboard Conversation, The Romanticism of the Russian Soul, doesn't really focus on the greatest hits so much. And names of Russian Romanticism, like Tchaikovsky or even Mussorgsky, but does include 5 of the 24 preludes of Rachmaninoff, music of Nikolai Metner, and Scriabin. Now, how did you decide what to include on that CD to introduce people to the Russian Romantic?
Yeah, in that particular program, the CD, as is true certainly with the program tonight, these are pieces of music I particularly love. I believe those who hear them will love them as well. And if one thinks of the Russian soul as producing very emotional music, music that's not only sad but very sad, and not only happy but very joyous, one certainly gets these wonderful extremes of musical speech.
It is a country of extremes, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
Boy. So talk to me about Nikolai Metner, which I'm sure people are not so familiar with.
Nikolai Metner was a contemporary of Rachmaninoff's, and like Rachmaninoff, wrote music in what would have been considered, even in their day, an old-fashioned passé musical language. But Rachmaninoff considered Metner to be one of the great composers of the time. Both of them were sort of thought of as walking musical corpses, because here they are, contemporaries of Alban Berg and Bela Bartok and Stravinsky and Schoenberg, and their musical language is 50 years behind time. But it teaches us. It's not whether something's new or not. It's whether it's good or not, whether it's going to last. And the works on tonight's program, for example, of Rachmaninoff, are not only works that have lasted, but have remained in the forefront of the piano literature. The problem, David, quite frankly, with Rachmaninoff's piano music is that he wrote it for his own transcendental virtuoso technique, which makes life very difficult for us much lesser mortals who try to play the music.
What would you like us to play of the Rachmaninoff that might be heard tonight?
I think the piece of music that brought Rachmaninoff as a young composer worldwide fame and name recognition, and that's the C-sharp minor prelude. I think if we could hear that, we could then talk about it a bit as well.
Terrific. More with Jeffrey Siegel, a radio conversation about his keyboard conversations. And now on CD, his performing Rachmaninoff's Prelude No. 2, Opus 3, in C-sharp minor. One of the most familiar preludes of Sergei Rachmaninoff, Opus 3, Number 2 in C-sharp minor, performed by my guest, Jeffrey Siegel, from his CD, Keyboard Conversations, The Romanticism of the Russian Soul. So, Jeffrey, what would you say as part of a keyboard conversation about that prelude?
Yeah, I should explain that, of course, a keyboard conversation is primarily a concert. I play everything straight through, just as I played this prelude straight through.
Yet another reason why I'm sorry we don't have a piano here for
well,
you.
Well, you have the recording, which is fine. What we like to think of as the plus, David, is that prior to the performance of each work, I speak to the audience about the piece of music they're going to hear. I speak briefly, informally, with non-technical language, and usually with musical excerpts of the piece that they're going to hear, so that when I sit down to play the piece straight through, the audience will really feel as if they're on the inside track and hopefully getting more out of the listening experience than a pleasant earwash of sound. This prelude of Rachmaninoff is so characteristic of the later composer, these big bronze-like sounds, the whole mood of the piece. He's already Rachmaninoff, and he's 18 years old when he writes this composition. And
going on in his head. Boy,
well, that's... he publishes it in Russia, and it catches on like wildfire, and it makes the name Rachmaninoff famous all over the world. So when he started the tour, he had to play it wherever he went for the next 50 years. And any wonder that he grew to hate the piece so. In fact, in his later life, he could only refer to the composition as it. He hated it. But it is, one can say what one likes about it. It is already a mature composer who has his own individual compositional style and sound.
It's interesting that one thinks of what these composers have gone through in their personal life, and circling back to Tchaikovsky, if Tchaikovsky had been at one with his personal and sexual life as a active homosexual, he'd probably just be writing some very cheery works instead of these deep, dark, probing works. We can read into that. That's
right.
To a certain extent.
Yeah, he too is an interesting case because he's very much a late bloomer, Tchaikovsky. With a couple of very notable exceptions, we don't regularly hear anything that Tchaikovsky wrote before he was in his early 30s, and he died when he was 53. So this enormous creative output, which we hear so frequently, is essentially the product of 20 years. He was very much a late bloomer. So if there are any young musicians, young composers out there who haven't hit it big yet by the time they're 30, they can think of Tchaikovsky as an inspiration.
I certainly do myself, that's for sure. Circling back to Rachmaninoff, which is being represented on this concert tonight at the Palo Alto JCC. Information about tonight's concert, by the way, at paloaltojcc.org. Another one of his preludes that you include on the Keyboard Conversations CD is going to be included as part of tonight's concert. Could you talk to us a little bit about the, we're talking about the Opus 23, number 6 in E-flat major.
This is a different side of Rachmaninoff. The harmonies are bright. The music has a wonderful, soft, luminous glow and of a certain contentment. We don't get the brooding, melancholy Rachmaninoff that one heard just a moment ago in the famous early prelude. This is a rather joyous piece. And I wonder if we could hear it first, and then I'll tell you what might have inspired this piece of music.
You wish it, so it shall be. This is the Opus 23, number 5 in... No, I'm sorry. Opus 23, number 6 in E-flat major, a prelude of Sergei Rachmaninoff. Then more with Jeffrey Siegel.
Thank you.
Rachmaninoff's Prelude No. 6, Opus 23 in E-flat major, performed by Jeffrey Siegel.
Yes, one of the joys for me of doing these keyboard conversations, rather than just playing the piece through, is to bring the audience into the picture of what might have inspired a piece of music. This particular piece, we have a pretty good idea. Rachmaninoff played it in concert one night, and a friend of his, Elena Grazina, came backstage to see him afterwards and said, you know, this piece of music had a particular inner joy. I hadn't heard it before. I was so touched with it. And he smiled and he confided to her that it was written the day that his daughter was born. He came home from the hospital, sat down, and in this wonderfully joyous mood, writes this lovely piece of music. So, sometimes there are connections with what's going on in a personal life and what the composer writes at that time. And sometimes, as we know with Mozart and Schubert, they write some of their most uplifting music in times of the greatest despair. It's almost as if the music is an escape for the composer from the trials and tribulations of his daily life. And of course, we musicians, we listeners to music are human beings. These stories touch us.
They really do. That's Jeffrey Siegel in a radio conversation discussing his keyboard conversations. The works we're hearing are represented on his CD called The Romanticism of the Russian Soul, Keyboard Conversations with Jeffrey Siegel. He's in performance tonight at the Palo Alto JCC.org for information on the tickets.
I believe the concert starts at 7:30.
Good
and it's based, people love romantic music. They're going to get a great dosage of it tonight with Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff.
During that last piece, we had a longtime listener call in to say that we had mentioned Mettner earlier and that he knows of a recording of Mettner at the piano accompanying Elizabeth Schwarzkopf.
Oh, my goodness. There are recordings of Mettner playing Mettner, but this I didn't know about. I would be very interested to hear this sometime. He's Mettner, and there are other composers like this, deserves to be better known, and the music deserves to be better known than it is. And on a future program here, I hope we can have some works of Nikolai Mettner.
Indeed. Speaking of future programs, you've got something coming up in May called Mistresses and Masterpieces. Can you give us a little tease of what that program's
going to
be like?
Yeah. The title means exactly what you think it means. It'll be on the 15th of May, another Thursday night at the Oshman Center, the JCC in Palo Alto. And it's compositions that are love-inspired by significant women in the composer's personal life. And the piece of music would not be what it is if it would not be for the romantic inspiration of that specific woman in the composer's life at this specific time. I don't have to invent a thing. It's all factual right there.
Well, let's have you back to talk about that in a few weeks then.
Thank you.
We just have time for you to give us a brief introduction to one of the other preludes that's represented on tonight's concert down in Palo Alto, the Opus 23, number 5 in G major.
Yeah, if there's a prelude of Rachmaninoff that is almost as familiar as the early one that he hated so much he could only refer to the composition as it. It is this piece of music, which has wonderful, strong, vibrant march rhythms, and then a very languorous, melancholy, contrasting middle section. And how he gets from the middle section back to the march music is one of the compositional strokes of genius in the composition.
Jeffrey Siegel, thanks for taking some time with us today.
Thank you.
Rachmaninoff Circling Back and his prelude, Opus 23, number 5, performed by Jeffrey Siegel. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. We'll have Jeffrey back to talk about his upcoming performances at the JCC in Palo Alto. Mistresses and Masterpieces in a couple of weeks. I'd also like to invite you to the Redwood Symphony this weekend, Saturday, a program of John Adams music as well as Claude Debussy, Lee Actor's alto saxophone concerto being performed by my good friend Joe Scalacci. Information at redwoodsymphony.org. I'm David LaTulipe. Thanks for listening to Open Air. See you next time.